From Quality Radio Productions, it's the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell. Welcome to another hour of sounds from radio's golden era. We'll open the hour with a broadcast from the Armed Forces Radio and Television Service, formerly known as Armed Forces Radio Service, now known as AFN. Most people in old-time radio know Armed Forces Radio for their rebroadcasts of U.S. network programs. In many cases, Armed Forces Radio transcriptions are the only copies of certain shows that are still in circulation among old-time radio fans, as the original network transcriptions have long since been lost. From time to time, however, Armed Forces Radio, or AFRTS, produced their own radio series that were never aired on commercial network radio here in the States. We have an episode of one such series, Macabre, a series which ran from late 1961 into early 1962, lasting just 8 episodes. The series was very well produced, telling stories of the supernatural and supernormal. This broadcast definitely falls within the science fiction category, in my opinion. Many of the actors for Macabre were personnel of the various branches of the armed forces. This broadcast was the second to last in the series, originally airing New Year's Day, January 1st, 1962, The Crystalline Man.
Man lives in a world of time and space. He lives in a spectrum of the universe. When he ventures beyond this limit, he is in the unknown, a realm where strange forces are brought into play. When man attempts to misuse these forces, he is sometimes destroyed. This is Macabre.
The Far East Network presents, in special performance, Macabre. Tonight's story, The Crystalline Man.
Yes?
This is Thomas Paine of the National Museum. I'm calling for Professor Abernathy. We've been trying to reach you for a week.
I've been out of town. Gone.
It's about the expedition to the glacier.
What? Have they returned?
Well, yes. Unexpectedly.
Did they find anything?
Not exactly. You see, Professor Norden...
Come. What about Professor Norden?
He did not come back.
What?
The members of the expedition are meeting tonight at the museum. Can you attend?
Certainly, Mr. Paine. What time?
8:00. And may I ask you, sir, not to fail us?
Of course I won't. But what's happened to Norden?
At the moment, sir, I cannot say. We'll expect you then at 8:00. What we have to report is of the utmost urgency.
Gentlemen, a simple expedition to the Arctic, and you come back whimpering like children. Now, really, what do you expect me to think, Professor Abernathy?
Please be seated, Dr. Vega. Thank God you've come. You know Thomas Paine of the museum?
Yes, he telephoned me.
And my associate, Craig Taylor.
How do you do, Mr. Taylor?
Good evening, Doctor.
Now, what happened to Norden?
It's hard to explain.
Professor, either he came back or he didn't. Which was it?
He did not.
That thing in the other room.
Not yet, Paine.
Thing? What thing?
Before you see it, Doctor, it'll take explanation.
What do you think? I am a child? You believe I'm too naive to know the facts? Let me refresh you. I backed your expedition. My father disappeared in those wilds 5 years ago and was never found. Professor Norton thought he knew the route, that he could find some trace, but you return without him, cowering like a pack of whipped puppies. Now, speak up, gentlemen. What happened?
Have patience with us, Dr. Vega. We have stumbled upon something we do not understand, something that has cost the life of Professor Norton and may not stop there.
Well, go ahead. Tell me the full story.
We had camped for the night on the glacier. The next morning, we noticed a fissure in the ice. A passageway large enough for a man to crawl through. In the ice, we could see the frozen body of a dog. It wasn't one of ours. I thought it might have been one of your father's. Norton decided to crawl into the fissure to investigate. Taylor remained with me. A storm came up suddenly, and when we called out to Norton in the passageway... Professor Norton, have you found any trace? Professor! What do you make of it, Craig? He's been in there 15 minutes. Do you think he's all right?
I don't know. We haven't heard from him since he left us. With a storm blowing, a fissure isn't exactly a safe place to be.
Danger of an avalanche. Better warn him. Professor Norton, there's a storm. Let's get out of here.
No answer.
Got a flashlight? It's dark in there.
Yes.
Come on, we better look for him.
Fissure doesn't appear too old.
No, perhaps only a few days old. Otherwise, there'd be a heavy layer of snow on the bottom. I hope that ice overhead is solid. Any kind of slide would bury us.
Pitch black now. I didn't realize the passage was this deep.
What's that ahead?
Huh?
It's like a rock where the glacier meets the mountainside.
2 more feet and we'll be there.
Why, it looks like the entrance of a cave. Norton must be inside.
Certainly took a chance going this far by himself. Shall we go in?
We have no choice. Look, it's not a natural cave.
You're right. The entrance is a carved arch. Solid quartz. Do you recognize the symbols?
I've never seen anything like this before. Where to find Craig, and by coincidence, too. If that fissure in the ice hadn't opened here, it might have been lost forever.
How old would you guess it is?
Impossible to tell. We've got to find Norton. Hand me the light. I'll go first. Professor Norton! Professor!
Looks like an ancient crypt. Tarnished urns, ornate carving.
Unhealthy atmosphere, Craig. I don't know what we've stumbled on, but from a past I know nothing about. Where could Norton have gone?
Seems to be the only room. He's got to be here.
I'll move the light around once again, slowly.
A man just doesn't disappear in thin air.
What's that?
Where?
A pile of rubble. Something caved in.
Yes, in the corner. Come on. It's Norton. He's alive.
Quick, clear the rocks. He's caught in the slide. Professor Norton, can you hear me?
Yes. I'm done for, Abernathy. You and Crane, get out of here as fast as you can.
Nonsense. We'll have you free in a moment.
There's another room behind those rocks.
Don't go in there. I moved some rocks to cover the doorway. Slide buried me.
Did you find a trace of Dr. Vega's father?
No. Just cover that doorway and leave. Norton!
Poor devil. He's gone.
Strange.
What's that?
I'm not a medical doctor, but he doesn't seem to have been fatally injured by the cave-in.
What do you mean?
The answer may lie in there.
He was probably delirious.
We'd better get out of here. But before we do, shouldn't we have a look?
Norton warned us.
Would a scientist refuse?
After you, Professor.
Careful, Craig. Don't upset that boulder. It could stop all our plans.
He's under that arch. We don't know how old this is. It may crumble.
Why, it's just a room like the other.
Look, straight ahead. At the foot of that altar.
Yes. Sparkles like a jewel.
That's what Norton warned us about.
Nonsense. We're scientists, Craig.
Norton was no fool.
Neither am I. Let's have a closer look. A 10-foot jewel. A prize from the Arabian Nights.
Or a quartz sarcophagus.
Of course. Why was Norton afraid of it? It's not locked. The lid can be raised.
Don't, Professor.
My boy, this is what every scientist dreams of. How can you refuse?
All right. I can't tell why. Something seems to be warning me to leave this alone. If you have to, take a look. Let's get out of here.
Harry, give me a hand.
Okay.
What was it? What did you find in the sarcophagus, Professor Abernathy?
Will you follow us, please, Dr. Vega?
Wait. It might be better to destroy it.
Mr. Taylor, you can't do that.
Yes, I know. The museum.
You might remember we have financed your exploits for many years. There is some sort of obligation to us, don't you think?
Pardon me. I'd forgotten the commercial aspects.
The public has a right to see these remnants of mankind's past.
Gentlemen, will you follow me, please? Frankly, we are at a loss to make it out. It is entirely beyond the range of my experience. In the center of the room, if you will.
The quartz sarcophagus. Well, what are we waiting for? Open it.
I hope we don't regret this.
Help me, Craig.
Okay.
There it is, Dr. Vega.
This is incredible. Is it some kind of joke?
We wish it were, Doctor.
Man. A crystalline man, perfect in detail, even to his thumbprints. It's fantastic. What do you think, Mr. Payne?
I haven't had a great deal of time to research it. However, I can't link him to any period of recorded history. He is not prehistoric, as he resembles modern man. His clothing is well-tailored, though of a design I've never seen. He looks 45, intelligent and scholarly. He doesn't have the appearance of death. The strange part is, instead of flesh and blood, he seems to be pure crystal.
Is it possible the man could once have lived? And if he could, what forgotten tongue lost in the antiquity of time would he speak?
We may know tomorrow.
How do you mean?
I believe that by some process unknown to us today, this man is still alive. It's no use. We've tried everything. He is solid crystal. I was mistaken.
He is perfect to the last blood vessel.
Why should a man who is not flesh and blood need blood vessels?
Shall we admit he is merely a sculptured statue?
We don't seem able to prove otherwise, but I feel some obvious fact is escaping us.
Wait. There is one further chance. He may be a silicon form of life. In that case, he should respond to electric shock, be recharged, so to speak. Let me connect these electrodes.
Any sign of life will show in the form of a brain wave on the electroencephalogram. Good thinking, Professor.
There. Now we'll give him a jolt.
Nothing. Try it again. Not a thing.
Look, an eyelid moved.
No, Payne, you're mistaken. Nothing moved.
Professor, did you see?
No. If he's alive, it's in a form unknown to us.
What will you do with him?
You financed the expedition, Dr. Vega. You call it.
But, gentlemen, the museum...
Mr. Payne, can't you forget that place? Does every scientific discovery have to go on display like a bargain in Gimbel's basement?
Well, I only assume the body would have to be disposed of somewhere.
Are you sure you want it, Mr. Payne? After Norden's warning?
What happened to Professor Norden had nothing to do with the crystalline man. He was probably delirious when you found him.
All right, enough. The truth of this still escapes us. However, it can serve no purpose by remaining here.
We may have it.
You may regret it, Payne, but go ahead. Take it. Put it on display in the slumber room. That may well be what he's doing.
Very well. We'll exhibit it in the public interest, with the provision that you retain the right to examine it when you choose.
Well, Professor, I just left the coroner's office. Too bad.
The coroner's office?
The guard we found unconscious here this morning. The one guarding the crystalline man last night.
Yes?
He just died. Crystalline Man will be heard in a moment. But first...
What causes traffic accidents? Weather conditions? Road conditions? Vehicle conditions? These all have some part in the total traffic picture, but it's the driver's own conditions, both mental and physical, that cause a great many of the accidents that you read and hear about day by day. You may find somewhere in the accident report that the driver in an accident was tired, angry, inattentive, or had been drinking. Harder to find in the report would be the driver's mental state at the time of the accident. In many cases, the driver didn't know, didn't think, or didn't care about the possibility of having an accident. How can he be made more aware of the danger he is causing to himself and everyone else? The National Safety Council suggests one good way is by an active community campaign against such thinking. And that's where you come in. Our community and our local safety organizations need your active support. Let's all accept our responsibility to join the fight for life and help save lives.
And now, Act Two of The Crystalline Man. You kids eat like horses. It's a good thing your father makes a little money. Takes it all just to feed you.
Craig, now stop it. When you were their age, you had some life in you, too.
There's plenty of life left in this old boy, Mary.
Hey, Dad, when you quit laughing, can I ask you a question?
Go ahead, Jimmy. Try me.
After supper, can I go over to Ralph's a while?
And can I go too, Daddy?
Now, wait a minute. Both of you? What's going on?
Ralph's got a new turtle.
You children run along, but don't be out late.
Oh, boy.
Come on, let's go.
Jimmy, you and Christine be careful and come home before dark.
Sure thing. Bye, Dad.
We will. Bye, Daddy.
Wow, a couple of wild Indians. Reminds me how old I'm getting.
Oh, darling, they're just little children.
I wish I could be carefree like that.
Craig, things are different, aren't they?
Oh? How?
Something's bothering you.
You're imagining it.
No, no. Ever since that last trip, you all seem worried. How long has it been in the museum?
2 weeks.
2 weeks. And two more.
Don't go on, Mary. The police said Mrs. Locks died from natural causes. She was found the next morning by her pail and mop in the Egyptian room.
And what about Gus?
Faithful old Gus. Best night watchman we ever had.
I know. He was old and ready to retire. But don't you think something got him, too? He was found like Mrs. Locks, dead the next morning.
Mary, you'd...
There's talk now, Craig. Before long, people will be afraid to go to the museum. If the police find any connection between those deaths and this crystalline man, you'll all be in trouble.
It's against any kind of logic to think that.
Darling, you've said so yourself. There are many things in this world we don't understand. That doesn't mean they don't exist. It means at the moment we haven't the capacity for understanding.
We've uncovered the genius of some civilization long past. If the man is not a statue, he certainly isn't a corpse, then he was preserved for a reason. Professor Norden suspected right away. He was trying to wall up the crypt so he wouldn't find him when he was fatally injured. Now the crystalline man lies in the museum like some Trojan horse, harboring God knows what menace from the dawn of time. I'm sorry, Mary. It had to come out.
I'm glad you said it, darling.
We should have destroyed him. We couldn't bring ourselves to do it. He's so lifelike. It would have seemed like murder.
You can't let things like this continue. The police have nothing to go on. But you know what's wrong. You can stop him.
All I have is a feeling, a suspicion. I promise you, Mary.
What, darling?
If there's another death, I'll take it on myself to find out what's wrong with the crystalline man.
There's the night watchman. You want to ask him, Christine?
No, you ask.
Oh, all right. Mister?
Eh? Museum's closed. You kids go away.
I gotta ask you something.
Run along now. Be dark soon. You ought to be home.
Please, mister. We have to go inside.
Oh, do you now?
You tell him, Christine.
Okay, Jimmy. We were here after school today. I left my homework in there.
Museum's locked up. Come back tomorrow. Your books will be turned into the main office. You can pick them up then.
But you don't understand.
She has to study her homework tonight. Don't you see?
Or I'll get a spanking.
Do your parents know where you are?
Gosh, no.
They think we're at Ralph's seeing a turtle.
We said that so I could get my homework. Please, mister.
Well, you should be more careful.
You don't want us to get spanked, do you?
I'm not supposed to let anybody in. I might lose my job. Regulations, you know.
It'll be a secret just between us. We won't tell anyone.
Yeah, a secret.
Okay. Just between us, then. But remember, no tricks. Whisk in, pick up homework, whisk out. Just like that. Check.
Check.
know where you left it, Christine?
Yes, on a table by the dinosaur.
It's pretty dark. Can you see your way?
I think so. Be right back.
What's your last name, son?
Taylor.
What? Your father is Craig Taylor?
Sure.
Professor Abernathy's associate. I knew it. Now I will be in trouble.
Don't worry. We won't tell him.
Some days you can't win. Christine, hurry up.
Let me go in. I'll find her.
Yes. Good idea. Quick, get your sister. Hurry up, son. I don't want any trouble. Now I've done it. When the professor finds I've broken regulations, I'll be out of me job. That's funny. Those kids are taking a long time. Christine! Jimmy! Make it snappy! Hope nobody comes along the street and sees me here with this door open. Oh, goodbye job. Hey, those two ought to be back. I don't hear a peep out of them. Getting too dark in there to make much out. Hey, Christine! Jimmy! Uh-oh. I don't like this. Hey there! You kids all right?
Who was she, Craig?
Edna Thorpe, a cleaning woman.
Please, Mr. Taylor. I hope there won't be no trouble about me letting the kids in. How did I know they'd find old Mrs. Thorpe dead?
Natural causes again, Craig?
Police coroner said heart attack. Christine, you're sure the dead woman was the only thing you saw?
Yes, Daddy. I just found my homework when I saw her. Then Jimmy came in.
We were too scared to move, Dad.
Uh-huh.
What are you going to do?
Mary, you can see what we're facing here. Take the children home. I'll be along later.
But, Craig, aren't you coming with us?
No, I'm spending the night in the museum. It's time we learn the truth.
Not alone, darling. That's too dangerous.
The deaths occur only when there are no witnesses. The only way to find out is to bait the hook. I'll stay in there alone tonight. The killer may be tempted to strike again. And then we'll know. Ten past two. Getting sleepy. Big place. Those two dinosaurs aren't kittens. Egyptian mummies back in the east wing. Caveman relics. And the crystalline man in the slumber room. He's a standout, all right. Attracts the crowds in that jewel sarcophagus. There he is. Almost in a standing position. Sarcophagus tilted back so he can't fall out. 6 feet of complete mystery. A man of the world, but not of this world. Question is he statue or is he real? I think Norton knew. Too bad he couldn't have told us more. The strange thing is that in this collection of relics of the past, he alone doesn't reflect some state of decomposition. The key lies there, I'm sure of it. But logic tells me our killer is flesh and blood. Wish they turned on more light at night. Oh, sorry I sent everyone away. Place has an eerie, uncomfortable feeling. Where's that pterosaur around here? Oh, there it is. Feels good to sit down. I don't think it'll hurt to close my eyes for a moment. I've been over every inch of this place. Safe enough, I guess. Could be coincidence. Those people who died, all old, including Norton. Oh, boy, I'm getting sleepy. Maybe a little catnap wouldn't hurt. Just a little one. Hardly hold my eyes open. Thank you.
Stop! Who are you? Crystalline lamp.
When I touch thee, breathe deeply, savage, and thou wilt be gone.
Wait! Then you are alive.
Since the beginning of time.
How old are you?
Perhaps a million of thy years.
But modern man doesn't go back that far. Who are you?
Loa, a man of science, flesh and blood as thou, until the change. I made the transition to silicon crystal, a higher form of life, free from disease, free from radiation sickness.
We are also men of science. Perhaps we can get together.
Savage, barbarians, we are eternally apart.
Why haven't you risen before?
This form of life is like a battery. It must be charged.
I see. With the life force of others.
Thou speakest well, Savage.
So that's what Norton knew. Revive him and there'll be no stopping him.
Thou knowest too much, Savage. What is thy saying? Will be gone.
No!
Stand still. It will be painless. Just a touch, and I will be of strength to begin my work.
Don't come any closer.
Fear me not, Savage.
I'm warning you.
Where can thou escape? The wall is behind, and I am before thee.
Keep away from me.
Now, Savage, I shall smite thee to death.
Mary!
Are you all right? I couldn't let you stay alone. I hid over there. What happened to him?
That scream, high enough to shatter crystal. You saved my life. Look, the man of a million years at our feet in a million pieces.
Just heard Macabre, a special Far East Network presentation. Tonight's story was The Crystalline Man. In our cast were John Buey, Milton Radmilovich, Walt Sheldon, Army PFC Alan Frank, William Verdier, Mitzi Hennessy, Christine Verdier, James Sheldon, Air Force Sergeant Al LePage. Associate Director was Carolyn Johnston. Technical supervision by Hiroshi Ono. With special sound patterns by Airman First Class James Conley and Air Force Sergeant Bob Eddy. This is Air Force Sergeant Al LePage speaking. Macabre was written and directed by William Verdier.
Macabre comes to you each week at this time through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
An episode of Macabre, an original production of the Far East Network of the Armed Forces Radio and Television Service. The Crystalline Man, the second-to-last episode in that 8-episode series, originally broadcast January 1st of 1962. You are listening to the Upstate Radio Theater. I'm Jake Longwell. If you want to get in touch with the program, you can do so by email. Our address, qualityradioproductions@gmail.com. And please visit our website. Much more info about the radio theater is available there, including full program playlists, as well as streaming audio of this and previous editions of the program. This is program number 1517 in the series. qualityradioproductions.blogspot.com is the address. Up next, an episode of Official Detective, a syndicated transcription series from the 1950s. This broadcast originally aired on November 29th of 1956. It's entitled Bridegroom Murdered.
Official Detective, dedicated to the men who guard your safety and protect your home, your police department. Now, Official Detective. Lieutenant John Hogarth, headquarters. About a month ago, a wealthy widow from Oklahoma married a man named Anthony Fowler. Headed for a honeymoon in Europe, the newlyweds, Jenny and Tony Fowler, stopped off in this city and took a room at the St. Elmo Hotel. They spent the evening at the theater and returned to their hotel room shortly after 11 o'clock.
Oh, thank you, Tony, darling. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, but let's not take it so seriously. After all, a young married couple should be gay.
A young married couple? Who are you trying to kid, Jenny?
That expression on your face. It's as though you hated me.
Oh, no, no, Jenny, I don't hate you. I don't feel any way at all about you. How could I? Good Lord, you're 25 years older than I am.
Tony, stop it! Stop it! Stop it!
Now, you hear that? You're disturbing the man in the next room. For heaven's sake, keep your voice down.
Listen, darling, I love you. I forgive you for the horrible thing you just said to me.
Now, wait a minute. For heaven's sake, have a glass of water.
Thank you.
Here.
Thank you, Tony. When we get to Europe, we'll never mention this. I think you must be very tired.
And get Europe out of your mind. I'm not going.
Not going on our honeymoon?
Honeymoon? Oh, don't be ridiculous. You might as well get it straight, Jenny. I only married you for your money.
Tony!
Oh, but now look what you've done.
I've dropped the water glass. I'm sorry. I better take it up off the floor. You might cut your foot.
Don't do that with your bare hands. You'll cut yourself.
Is that what you really want, Tony? Is money the only thing you want?
That's it. I guess it's plain by this time that I'm pretty much of a louse, huh? Well, you're right, Jenny. I am. I always have been.
What do you want me to do?
Divorce me, of course. And make a nice, fat financial settlement.
There'll be no divorce, Tony. That isn't the way our marriage is going to end.
Oh, Jenny, stop that. Now, look, you've cut your hand. You've got blood all over your blouse.
Oh, that's all right. I'd better put this broken glass in the wastebasket.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, go into the bathroom and clean up. You look terrible.
Yes, I guess I do. I'm sorry. Tony.
Yeah, what?
I meant what I said. Our marriage isn't going to end in divorce.
Hey, Lieutenant. How's for the all-night coffee joint before you head home?
Good idea, Alan. As the commuter says to his wife, I had a hard day at the office.
You and me both. I'll lock the files.
Lieutenant Hogarth. Oh? Which hotel? Was it a shooting? Oh. Yes, the blunt instrument always makes it tougher. Listen, nobody's to leave the hotel till further notice. Got that? Yes, we'll see you. Leaving right away.
Well, Lieutenant?
A murder at the St. Elmo Hotel.
In the
hotel room, Hogarth and Allen are continuing their investigation of the murder of Tony Fowler. The body has just been taken from the room, and the detectives are questioning Tony's widow.
Now, Mrs. Fowler, will you tell us exactly what happened here?
I'll do my best, Lieutenant. We just come in from the theater, my husband and I. We talked for a few minutes, and then I started to get ready for bed. I went into the bathroom to bathe and wash out a few things.
Now, while you were in there, did you hear any sounds from this room?
No, sir. You see, the water was running most of the time, so I couldn't have heard.
How long were you in there, Mrs. Fowler?
I'm not sure. 20 minutes, perhaps.
And when you opened the door and came out?
I was in my nightdress and negligee. I saw my husband lying there on the floor.
Take your time.
It was his head that was so horrible. What was it? What was he struck with?
Something heavy and blunt. We haven't found the weapon, but we think it was one of the bedside lamps.
Yes. There were two lamps in here.
So the housekeeper told us. They were a matched pair, heavy metal base with a glass column going up to the bulb.
By the way, we noticed that bandage on your right hand. What happened?
A bandage? Oh, I poured myself some water and accidentally knocked the glass off the table. It shattered on the floor, and when I was picking up the pieces, I cut myself.
And you threw the pieces in this wastebasket?
Yes.
We wondered how this glass got in here.
Well, let's get back to your story, Mrs. Fowler. You came out of the bathroom and saw the body. Then what?
I'm not sure, but I remember screaming, and then a man came running in. He said he was a guest in the adjoining room. He picked up the telephone and told the operator.
How did this man from the next room get in here?
Well, I don't know. He just opened the door, that's all. It must have been unlocked.
If the killer's prints were on the knob, this guy certainly ruined them.
Now, Mrs. Fowler, as you know, the story of your marriage has been in newspapers all over the country. It was considered news for many reasons. Your social prominence, your great wealth, and the rumor that you took a great deal of cash with you on your wedding trip. Is that true? Did you bring a lot of cash?
Of course.
How much?
$175,000.
What? You had all that in cash?
Yes, Sergeant.
Well, that much money is a strong motive for murder, Mrs. Fowler.
I know, but it wasn't stolen. I made sure of that before you came. It's in a suitcase. Here, in the closet.
Here, let me get that, huh?
Oh, thank you. You may open it if you like.
Yeah, I'd like to see that much money. Holy Hannah. Is this $175,000?
Yes, in thousands, hundreds, and some smaller denominations.
I'm going to have this suitcase put in the hotel vault, Mrs. Fowler.
Very well.
There's another reason why this marriage of yours was considered news. The fact that you were 25 years older than your husband.
That didn't affect our happiness at all. Tony loved me.
And you had no differences? No spats or arguments?
Why, of course not, Lieutenant. Tony worshipped me.
Well, I'm sorry to have upset you. Alan, have Mrs. Fowler move to another room on this floor. I'm sure she'd be more comfortable.
Okay. What about this money?
We'll have to put it in the vault right away.
Well, the motive certainly wasn't robbery, or this suitcase full of dough would be gone.
Could have been robbery. The killer might have gotten scared away before he found the suitcase.
Maybe so.
As soon as we get a chance, I want to question that man in the next room.
Yeah, who is it?
Police officers.
Look, I'm sleeping now. Come back in the morning.
That'll be too late. We're investigating the murder in the room next to yours. Come on, open up.
Okay, wait a second.
Say, I thought you said you were sleeping. How come you got your bag packed and you're wearing your hat and coat, huh?
Okay, so you caught me in a tiny lie.
Say, turn around. I want to get the full light on your face.
I see the trouble, Lieutenant. You know this puss all right.
I thought so. Mickey Potts.
Yeah, that's me.
Hey, fill me in, will you, Lieutenant?
Mickey Potts is an old-time thief, Alan. You wouldn't remember him. Where were you going in such a hurry, Potts?
Anywhere, to get away from here. With my record, I knew you cops would be asking me a million questions.
That's right. You got any answers ready?
One's all I need. I don't know who brained that guy in the next room.
Well, tell us what you do know.
Okay. I hear the old dame let out a scream, and then she screams again, and I run in like a dope. Her door's unlocked. I see the stiff on the floor. So I pick up the phone and holler murder. Well, that's the whole story. Go ahead, send me up for life.
Now, don't be impatient. Maybe that'll happen later. Now, tell me this. Did you hear anything in there before Mrs. Fowler screamed?
Yeah, I hear somebody sloshing around the bathroom for a long time.
And before that?
Well, before that, I hear the two of them having an argument.
What about?
How do I know? Who listens? Anyways, I knock on the wall to shut them up. Hey, what's your pal looking for?
Don't get upset, Mickey. I'm just having a look around your room to see if you left anything.
Oh, sure. You cops are very good that way. Hey, Lieutenant. One of the bellboys told me about this Mrs. Fowler. He says she's that rich old dame from Oklahoma.
Rich is right. Some coincidence, you having the room right next door, eh?
So help me, that's all it is, a coincidence.
Mm-hmm. But you may as well get undressed, Potts. Go to bed.
You mean I gotta stay, huh?
Till further notice. Let's go, Sergeant.
Okay.
Alan, go down to the lobby and see what you can learn from the staff.
Right.
When you're finished, come back up. I'll be questioning the other guests on this floor. I'm sorry to disturb you at this hour, miss, but I'm talking to all the guests on this floor.
Oh, that's okay, Lieutenant. I couldn't sleep anyway. Imagine being this close to a murder.
Your name and home address, please.
Rose Clark. I'm from Madison, Wisconsin.
What are you doing in this city, Miss Clark?
Oh, I came to buy clothes. I do that every year. Say, is the dead man really that Tony Fowler like the maid told me?
Yes. Did you know him?
Me? Gosh, no. But I read about those two in the paper. I was absolutely fascinated. Imagine her being 25 years older.
Yes. Miss Clark, this room of yours is directly across the court from the room where the murder was committed.
I know, Lieutenant. Gives me goosebumps.
From this window, you have a direct view into that room. I was wondering whether you heard anything or saw anything.
Well, yes, as a matter of fact, I did. But I don't suppose it means anything.
Tell me about it anyway.
Well, it was, maybe 11:30. I was at this window looking up to see if the stars were out. That's when I saw this woman. She was at the window over there throwing something out. When I heard it smash down in the courtyard, I knew it was something made of glass. So maybe it was a whiskey bottle.
Do you think this woman was Mrs. Fowler?
Golly, I wouldn't know. It was too dark. I could just see her outline, that's all. Lieutenant, is it true what the paper said about Mrs. Fowler? Does she really have a suitcase full of money?
Well, Miss Clark, the newspaper said a lot of things that,
Lieutenant, it's me.
Come in, Sergeant.
The maid told me you were in this room. Oh, excuse me, miss.
Certainly.
I think I found the murder weapon, Lieutenant.
Yes?
Somebody reported hearing a crash down in the courtyard around the murder time. I went out just now and looked. It was the lamp, just like you figured.
Anything on it?
Blood, all over the metal base. That's all that's left of the lamp. The glass is in a million pieces, not a chance of any fingerprints.
Hmm. Is Mrs. Fowler settled in her new room?
Yeah, 907.
I think we'd better talk to her again. Well, thanks a lot, Miss Clark. I hope you can get some sleep now.
I'll try, Lieutenant. Good night.
Now, Mrs. Fowler, let's have the truth about you and your husband.
The truth? What do you mean?
The man who had the room next to yours said he heard you having a loud argument. Told us he had to knock on the wall.
No, he must be wrong.
Mrs. Fowler, I asked for the truth.
All right. Tony and I did disagree. But it wasn't about anything important. It was just about the play we'd seen.
I see. Why did you throw the lamp out the window?
Throw the lamp out of the window? I don't know what you're talking about.
You deny doing it?
Of course.
Now about your hand. Did you really cut it when you were gathering up the pieces of the water glass?
Yes. What are you men trying to do to me?
Get the truth. You weren't straight with us about arguing with your husband before he was killed.
Well, I was ashamed to tell you about that. You suspect me, don't you? You really suspect me of murdering Tony?
If your suitcase full of money were missing, we wouldn't suspect you half as much.
But one of my suitcases is missing.
What?
I didn't know it till they moved me into this room. It was a duplicate of the case with the money in it.
Well, what's in the suitcase you claim is missing?
Well, some of my clothing. Suits, sweaters, and shoes. You don't believe that it's missing.
We'll have to take your word for it.
Well, why should I lie to you?
Maybe to get a burglary motive into the case.
But I'm not lying.
Well, I hope not. All right, Alan, let's get out of here. I imagine Mrs. Fowler would like a little time alone to do some thinking.
Hey, let me alone. Let go of my arm.
Quiet down, Potts. You'll wake everybody in the hotel.
What's the idea, you two cops grabbing me like this?
I told you to go to bed. Instead, we find you walking around the hall. Now, let's get back to your room.
Okay, don't drag me like a drunk. I'm sober and I'm walking.
What's the idea, you prowling around?
I was getting stir-crazy in my room. Just one little thin wall between me and where that guy was murdered. It was spooky. I was getting tense. I had to come out and walk around the hall so I wouldn't flip my wig.
How long you been out of your room, Potts?
About 10, maybe 15 minutes.
Okay, here's your room. Al and I are going to put you to bed.
Ah, look, you cops don't have to come in. I can put myself to bed. I've been doing it for decades.
We're coming in. We want to make sure... Potts, where did that come from?
Where'd what come from, Lieutenant?
The suitcase at the foot of the bed. Open it, Alan.
Hey, that ain't mine.
I'll say it isn't. Mrs. Fowler's, Lieutenant. Her initials are on it.
It's a duplicate of the one she had the money in.
Yeah, let's see what's in here. Suits. Sweaters. Shoes, just like she said. Well, Potts, start talking.
Hey, look, this was planted on me. It was planted in my room when I was out pacing the hall.
Maybe so. Now, suppose you go to bed and stay there. And don't try to get out of this room, because I'm going to have a patrolman stationed outside your door.
Okay, Lieutenant, but this is going to be a night of positive terror.
Alan, we'll go back to headquarters now. I want you to take this suitcase to the crime lab and have it examined for fingerprints.
Mrs. Fowler.
One moment, please.
You are Mrs. Fowler?
Yes.
My name is Rose Clark. I'm also a guest in the hotel. May I come in and talk to you?
Of course.
I know it's almost 2:30, but I couldn't sleep. And after your terrible tragedy, I'm sure you can't either.
Oh, no, Miss Clark. Of course I can't.
I thought maybe there was some way I could comfort you.
Oh, that's very thoughtful of you. I've just been sitting here thinking of my poor husband.
I know, Mrs. Fowler. I was thinking of Tony myself.
You knew him?
I knew him rather well. You know, I said maybe there was some way I could comfort you. But you could comfort me even more.
How, Miss Clark?
By giving me the suitcase. You heard me. I want that suitcase. The one with the money in it. Where is it?
Are you a thief?
Never mind that. Where is it?
Please!
Don't scream. You hear me, old woman? Why don't you make a sound? Where is that suitcase full of money?
I haven't got it. Those policemen took it.
You're lying.
It's true. They put it in the hotel vault.
Okay. We'll get it out of the vault. Pick up that phone. Tell the night clerk to get it out of the vault and bring it up here.
No.
Do as I say.
Oh, stop that. Please. I can't stand it.
Very few people can, especially old ones like you. So stop kidding yourself, lady. Get on the phone and tell them to bring that suitcase up here. Come on. Tell them now while you can still talk.
It's 2:30 in the morning at police headquarters. Lieutenant Hogarth comes into his office, bursting with news.
Hold on to your hat, Alan.
Yeah, what cooks?
The boys and records identified the prints in the suitcase. They belong to a young woman named Ada Lasker, confidence woman.
Ada Lasker? Don't know her.
You will in a minute. The boys told me that Ada works with a con man named Buck Babson.
That's so?
I got their mugshots out of the files. This is Ada. Recognize her?
Hey, let me... Hey, this is Rose Clark.
The gal in the hotel. Now, here's a shot of her sidekick, Buck Babson. You won't recognize him, though. The only time you saw him, he was dead, with his head bashed in.
You mean Tony Fowler?
Yep. Got his prints from the morgue. Tony Fowler was really Buck Babson.
Con man taking that poor old gal for her dough, huh?
Looks that way. He and the girl were working together, but something went wrong, and he got killed. Let's get back to the hotel. I want to call Rose Clark by her right name and see what happens. Miss Clark! Alan, see if she's in the bathroom.
Sure. Miss Clark! Not in there, Lieutenant.
Look what I found on the windowsill. Binoculars. Behind the curtain.
She had a direct view with the murder room.
Yes, she must have been watching for some signal.
Her things are still here. Where do you think she went?
Out to make another stab at getting that money? Come on, hurry.
Are you going to pick up that phone?
No, you can't make me.
Do as I say. Tell them to send that suitcase up here. Okay, Jenny, we'll try something else.
No! Please!
Quiet!
Help! Help!
Help!
Help!
Mrs. Fowler, all right?
Oh, this woman was torturing me.
She's lying.
You'll be quiet. Alan, stay here with Mrs. Fowler. Phone for a doctor and wait till he comes.
Okay.
I'll talk to this woman outside in the hall. Come on.
Let go of my arm.
I said come on.
Look, you're going to believe that crazy old woman?
Yes.
Why?
Because you're Ada Lasker. You got a criminal record.
You're crazy.
Ada, I've got you cold. Now tell me how Buck Babson died tonight. And don't give me that look. I found out that Tony Fowler was Buck Babson. So how did he die? Did you double-cross him?
You're so smart, why didn't you tell me?
I'll tell you part of it. You took a room across the court and watched through binoculars. Buck was to give you a signal, but you didn't wait for it. Am I right? Ada, you got to tell it sometime.
Okay, handsome. We did have a plot rigged up. Buck was to signal and I was to go over. He left the door unlocked. He was to go down to the bar and talk to a lot of people for an alibi.
And you were to kill Mrs. Fowler, take the suitcase full of money, and leave the hotel.
Say, you are smart.
Never mind that. You did double-cross him, didn't you?
For $175,000? Certainly. Through the glasses, I saw the old girl go into the bathroom. So I went over to the room. When Buck had his back turned, I let him have it with the lamp. He sank right down without knowing what hit him.
Then what?
Well, I threw the lamp out of the window, grabbed his suitcase, and took it back to my room. Only trouble was, it was the wrong suitcase. Had clothes in it instead of money.
So later you planted that suitcase in the room of a certain Mr. Potts.
Yeah. Say, handsome, are you interested in money?
Definitely.
Well, downstairs in the vault there's $175,000 and a suitcase. You had it put into that vault, and you can get it out. Can't you?
Sure. What did you have in mind?
Oh, a quick trip somewhere. Just you and me.
Ada, you must be a mind reader.
You mean you were thinking of a trip?
Mm-hmm. Just the two of us.
Well, what do you know? Where to?
Police headquarters.
Huh?
You'll love it there this time of year. Come on, Ada. Let's get going.
Our cast, Sergeant Allen, was played by Lawson Zerbe, Jenny by Doris Rich, Rose by Kathleen Cordell, and Potts by James Monks. Official Detective is produced and directed by Wynn Wright, written by Albert G. Miller. All names of persons and places used in this program are fictitious. Any resemblance to names of actual persons, living or dead, is coincidental. Jack Irish speaking. This program came from New York.
Official Detective, an episode entitled Bridegroom Murdered. That was a syndicated broadcast, first aired on November 29th, 1956. We have a few moments remaining before we wrap up this hour of the program, so let's listen to an episode of Incredible But True, an early 50s syndicated series telling strange but true stories, each episode lasting a little over 3.5 minutes. This episode, The Burglar of Blackpool.
To most readers of the daily newspapers, bank robberies are common and rather unmysterious events. But there is on record the strange story of a bank that was robbed without a gun, and apparently without even a robber. The Midland Bank in Blackpool, England, is what is known as an eminently sound institution. And the only dubious incident which mars its long and honorable record of service is the one that occurred on August 6, 1926. It was on that Saturday, at high noon, when the doorman was just closing the doors, that one of the Midland's regular clients entered the bank with a large bag under his arm. He was Mr. Lloyd Fenwick of the Corporation Tramways Department.
Morning, Mr. Fenwick.
£800 in here, all treasury notes.
I'll make out the slip for you, sir. But you'd better open the bank yourself.
I don't know who else could open it. Got a new type of lock on it. No one could possibly open it unless they know the secret, and I'm the only one who knows it. I've got another bag out in the motor van with all the silver in it. Safe enough to leave this one on the counter, I suppose.
Oh, yes, of course. Just leave it where it is, then.
As he turned away from the cashier's counter, Mr. Fenwick noticed that the bank was still quite crowded. Nevertheless, since it was now past the noon hour, the doorman had locked the doors to prevent latecomers from entering. As he unlocked them for Mr. Fenwick, the tramway's official remarked,
"No need to lock up again, my friend. I'm coming right back in."
But the doorman was a man of caution. During the few moments that Fenwick was gone, he stood by the closed doors, his hand on the key. When the official returned to the cashier's window, he carried another bag, smaller than the first one, in his hand.
We'll count the treasury notes first, sir, if you don't mind.
Makes no difference to me. Well, give it to me. The bag with the treasury notes. You must have put it away.
I? Oh, no, sir. It's that night over here where you... Good Lord, sir. It's gone.
Yes, the black leather bag had vanished from the cashier's counter. What's more, it had vanished from the bank itself. The police were summoned, but a most thorough investigation failed to reveal its whereabouts. Fenwick, the cashier, and the police themselves were utterly mystified. At 3 o'clock that same afternoon, Patrolman Cook was strolling down Needham Lane, just a block away from the Midland Bank.
Hello. Someone must have lost a bag. I say now, could this be the one what's missing from the bank?
Tucking the bag under his arm, Patrolman Cook made his way quickly to the central police station. And there, while one of the officers got in touch with the tramway department, the others took turns trying to open the lock. But the lock refused to yield. They were still working over it when Mr. Fenwick arrived.
This is it, gentlemen. I only hope the money's still there.
But the lock's still closed, isn't it? That simply means no one could open it.
None of us here could make the blooming thing work, sir.
No. You just take hold of it like this, see?
Aye.
And you insert the key. Good Scott. The treasury notes. They're not in the bag.
Though every indication pointed to the fact that the bag had not been opened, that it could not possibly have been opened, nevertheless, the money was missing. And while this was remarkable in itself, it was no more remarkable than the bag's disappearance from the bank through a door that was locked and guarded. The £800 were never found. And neither was the solution to the strange mystery. A mystery incredible but true.
Incredible but True. A syndicated series in much the same vein as Ripley's Believe It or Not or Strange as It Seems. An episode entitled The Burglar of Blackpool. That syndicated broadcast from sometime in the early 1950s. I say sometime because we don't have specific dates for any of these episodes, unfortunately. It's rather difficult to pin down exact air dates because these syndicated programs aired on different stations around the country, on different days, during different weeks and months, and even during different years, no doubt. Unfortunately, that's all the time we have for this hour of the program. My name is Jake Longwell. I hope you enjoyed our trip back in time. And I invite you to tune in again when you can for more classic sounds from the golden age of radio. The Upstate Radio Theater is distributed by Quality Radio Productions.